There was a time when being an innovator was not such a good thing. In fact, back in the 17th century, if you were an innovator, you could be accused of being a heretic, and you could be imprisoned for life or even have your ears cut off. Well, fortunately, times have changed, and today, innovators are our modern-day heroes. So they're the people that we admire and idolise. But interestingly, while there's been interest in entrepreneurship and in innovation in general, there hasn't been a lot of research into innovation leadership or intrapreneurship. So there hasn't been a lot done on what an innovator looks like, what an innovator profile is. I decided I'd take up that challenge, and 6 years ago, I started researching what an innovator profile looks like. I want to do just a light, unvalidated version. This is a quick quiz. Don't take it too seriously. Don't get upset by it if you don't get the results you like. But it's just to give you a feel for the different perspectives that people take. And it's actually based on some research that shows that your travel preferences say something about your innovation preferences. First question is, when you travel, what is your preferred destination? Do you prefer to go somewhere as different as possible, somewhere as exotic as possible, distant, or somewhere the same? When you travel, what sort of food do you prefer? Would you prefer to eat off a local street cart, have authentic local food, or B, would you prefer to eat at an international standard restaurant? What about your activities? Would you prefer to have a wild adventure experience or relax by the pool? What about your sightseeing mode? Do you prefer to A, find your own way around, or B, go on an organized tour? And finally, your accommodation. Would you choose Airbnb, or would you choose an international brand hotel? Who had more A's than B's? And hands up if you had more B's than A's. Most of you actually had A's. And what I call these two profiles is a traveler or a tourist. So A is your traveler type. That's somebody who likes to explore, likes to push the boundaries, likes to try different things, likes to connect, likes diversity. And there's a lot of value in that for innovation, obviously. You can see the connections there with breakthrough innovation, with disruptive innovation. We need those types of people. But there's a challenge at the extreme. So you think about at the extreme, the traveler may not settle. They might get a bit too close for comfort in some situations. And I had that situation recently where I was staying in an Airbnb apartment in Melbourne. It was a two-bedroom apartment with a small bathroom, and I was renting one of the rooms. And I was staying with a lovely young man, but one morning I was in the bathroom putting on my makeup when he knocked on the door and he said, "Do you mind if I come in and brush my teeth?" And I went, "Sure." And so there we were, standing side by side at the sink, and he was brushing his teeth, I'm doing my makeup, and I'm thinking, I hope he doesn't do anything else in the bathroom while he's here. This is getting a little bit too close for comfort. And so my adventurous spirit was feeling, oh, you know, there may need to be some boundaries here. And I think that's an interesting thing with the shared economy, that we're stretching things, but how far? And here's an interesting Airbnb marketing campaign that came up recently. And it was a video, but when the video was turned into tweets as part of the marketing campaign, it actually sounded quite creepy. Go and look through their windows so you can understand their views. Sit at their tables so you can know their tastes. Sleep in their beds so you may know their dreams. And other people started sending tweets in as well, and they said things like, go to their computers and look into their bank accounts. They said, sleep on their pillows and feel their dreams and nightmares. They said, try on their underwear and see if it fits. What about the tourist? So if you're a tourist, you're probably feeling like you're pretty safe. I'm not going to pick on you. But the tourist type has a lot of advantages. So these are the type of people who like to check details before committing, play it safe, you're consistent, you're stable, a lot of benefits, and you can see with innovation where I'm going. But there can be an extreme as well with the tourist mindset. So you think about what happens if people don't connect enough with the local culture and aren't open enough, then they can become insular. And here's an example from Thomas Cook. So it's a letter of complaint that went to Thomas Cook saying, "Dear Thomas Cook, we went to Spain recently and there were too many Spanish people there. The receptionist spoke Spanish, the taxi drivers were Spanish, the food was Spanish. We had to line up outside to catch the boat and there was no air conditioning. I think it should be explained in the brochure that the local convenience store does not sell proper biscuits like custard creams or ginger nuts." But you can see at the extreme, you can become insulated. So let's get straight to the point and tie this in with the innovation mindsets. And this is what came up in my research, that there are actually two sides to innovation, and most of us don't know that, and most of us don't recognize it. This is known as the innovation paradox. And I focused on that in looking at leadership, how you lead innovation. You actually need two sides, two perspectives equally. So on the first side, we need that exploration orientation. So we need to be able to focus on openness, to explore new ideas for growth, like the traveler, the breakthrough innovation, the disruptive innovation. But do you know what? This is a new approach to innovation. Although this is what we typically focus on, we assume that this is what innovation is all about. Back in the 13th century, innovation actually meant incremental changes to a contract. So it was actually more about preservation, which is focusing on maintaining current systems and structures for stability. So you need those small incremental changes. You don't want to destabilize the system. You want to build incrementally for innovation for the future. And what's fascinating is we don't look at needing one or the other. The paradox is it's not either or, it's both and. We need both simultaneously. So they're contradictory concepts, yet they're complementary. They're independent, yet they're interdependent as well. And this is, I find this fascinating. How do you balance both of these perspectives? And how do you make sure you have innovation? Because unless you can balance both perspectives, your innovation will not be sustainable. So either you're racing off into the future with exploration and you don't have a firm foundation for growth, or you're building so slowly and incrementally that you can't cope with future challenges. We must innovate now to survive and thrive, and we must do it sustainably. Now, when I try and explain this concept to executives and organisation, I use this model. And I'm just going to put it up there, and I'm going to pick in on the front row again, or people down the front section. Does anyone recognise what this is? Okay, what it is it's actually a computer-simulated model of the magnetic fields around the Earth. And I find this quite a beautiful picture, because it's at one sense, in the centre there, it's chaotic, but there's this beautiful alignment around the edge of the Earth. So the yellow lines at the bottom of the picture represent the magnetic fields at the South Pole moving away from the Earth, and the blue lines at the top of the picture represent the magnetic fields coming back into the Earth. And what's happening in the centre is that heated dynamo that's creating that magnetic field. And the magnetic field actually performs an important function. So the alignment of that North and South Pole creates these lines of force that protect the Earth from solar storms. So think about this model in terms of organisations. You have to have both exploration and preservation, North and South Poles, but they have to work in alignment. There needs to be synergy between them in order to have sustainable innovation, in order to protect the organisation from future change and future disruption, unintended disruption. And yet, look into the centre there, and you've got these forces called the Corrales forces, where the molten lava is generating a lot of heat, creating a dynamo that's... It's both highly powerful, so if it's harnessed effectively, that can drive innovation forward, propel innovation forward, but it's also highly disruptive and destructive. So if it's not channeled effectively, it can pull an organization apart. So I think this is a powerful symbol. And if we use the arrow at the south to represent exploration, the forces moving away from the Earth, if there isn't a counterbalance, then your ideas can get lost in space. You don't know where you're going, you don't know what's happening. They're not grounded. So you need that balancing force, which is the preservation perspective, and it's bringing everything back down to Earth. It's grounding everything. So that's your focus on building systems and structures for stability. Both of them together working in synergy is very highly powerful, very highly effective. So when I was looking into, you know, the impact of this research, I wanted to identify how do you get that alignment between the North and the South Poles? How do you make this model work? There were two things that I felt were really important. First of all, I believe that you need paradoxical cognition, which is a paradoxical awareness that there are these forces at work. And secondly, I identified that you actually need to break down these orientations into dimensions so that you know how to take action. You know what that means in practice. So that was the next stage of my research. And I interviewed global innovation leaders and executives from other organizations as well over a period of time. And I then went through the research to look at the past 60 years of research into innovation. And I recognized that most research focuses on that exploration orientation. So that's where I started. And 60 years ago, there was a particularly fascinating piece of research that was done into how creative eugenic cultures are created. Creative eugenic cultures are cultures where there are an unusual number of geniuses. And they popped up over time in different places, different locations. And the researchers found that where there are particular psychological, political, economic, psychosocial, sociocultural cycles that were going on, they came into alignment and created these creative eugenic cultures. And the Renaissance Europe was one of those periods in time. So think about what they identified. And I've distilled their factors down, according to other research as well, and my own interviews, came up with four key dimensions for exploration. The first one was freedom. So you need a foundation of freedom in order to have innovation. This is your first most important factor. And these researchers identified that democratic countries produce more creative geniuses. That's been proven by research today, that democratic countries actually produce more patents. So 60 years later, we're showing that this is in fact true. Think of an interesting example as a case study. This is like twin studies in psychology. You have North and South Korea, two countries side by side, same environment, but extremely different in terms of innovation. So while South Korea ranks very highly on global innovation rankings, North Korea doesn't rank at all. What's the difference? The leadership style. One is oppressive, autocratic, the other one is democratic. Bring that back to the organization where you've got a democratic organization where people have the freedom to express themselves, to think openly, to try ideas and fail without worrying about the consequences, where they can challenge the status quo, where they can break habitual ways of doing things, then you have a better degree of innovation. And that happens, at the individual, team, organization level. The next factor that they identified was openness. So there needs to be an openness, a willingness to consider other ideas and willingness to connect with diversity and to draw in all those different perspectives. And this is what particularly happened during the Renaissance period. So you had Europe, where there are a lot of different countries and cultures existing side by side in close proximity, and people could freely cross the borders and share ideas. So as an example, the printing press, even though elements of the printing press were produced in different countries around the world, such as in China, in Egypt, the printing press didn't come together until the Renaissance period in Europe with Gutenberg. So that openness to connecting different ideas, which is very much about creativity and innovation, happened in that environment. So that's the second most important thing. And we're doing this a lot with open offices these days. We're trying to open up and connect externally with cross-sector partnerships and so on. What about collaboration? That's the next important point, because you can have close proximity. You can have people sitting side by side, but not collaborating. So this is a deliberate element that's equally important. People have to actually build on each other's ideas to come up with something superior. And finally, flexibility. This was the final factor. And think about how important this is, that you keep trying and retrying, again, not being afraid of failure. Flexibility to test, to prototype, to push through, trial different ideas until you come up with something good. So this is your exploration orientation, four key factors. But like I mentioned with the traveller, who had a lot of benefits, so they had freedom, openness, collaborated with other people, very flexible. There was an issue at the extreme, and the same thing here. If you take these concepts to the extreme, then they can be destructive. So too much freedom can lead to chaos, which means you need some control to balance it out. Too much openness can lead to no clear direction. So you need some focus as well. Too much collaboration can actually be a problem. You can have groupthink. So you need some independence, some independent thinking. Too much flexibility can be a problem because you can end up being unstable. So you need some stability as well. And this is the eight dimensions that I identified in the research that are important. So you can see how they work as counterbalancing forces. Now I'm going to take you to the extreme on the preservation side. So what happens here? If you have too much control, it can become oppressive. If you have too much focus, it can become insular. Too much independence, and you can become disengaged. Too much stability can become rigidity, inflexibility. So somehow there's this path that you need to navigate, recognizing the tension between each of these, and I call them paradox pairs. So freedom and control, openness, focus, collaboration, independence, flexibility, stability, they're your paradox pairs. How do you keep that tension between the two effectively? Just before I go into how you do that, I just want to give you two quotes, and these demonstrate the paradoxical thinking that innovation leaders have, because in one sentence, the next quote I show you, there'll be some yellow writing to represent the exploration orientation and some writing highlighted in blue to represent the preservation orientation. And you'll see how this person is rapidly switching between the two concepts. So they're holding those dimensions in tension. And the quote reads, "Organizations that empower, there's your freedom, and set direction, there's your control. They give you freedom within boundaries to do things. That's where you get that better degree of innovation." That's powerful, isn't it? Embodying, embracing both at the same time, recognizing the importance of both. Here's my next quote. And this is from an innovation director of a large global FCMG. "Innovators are self-driven and think, play independently," there's independence, "but to commercialize and gain momentum, you have to work collaboratively. You need both." And if you think about trying to embody both of those perspectives, there's going to be a lot of tension at the core of that. Internally, you might have that tension. Within a team, you might have that tension. Within an organization, you might see that tension. So it's going to be happening at all levels simultaneously. It's a very complex concept, but it's fascinating when you try to unpack it.